Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Ruse Podcast. As always, I'm Carter Spires, here with my co-host Matthew Bartlett, the founder and managing editor of The Roost, your premier source for Rice sports news and analysis. Thanks to everybody who's been listening to our extended off-season interview series, as we're calling it so far. If you haven't, please check those other episodes out. Leave us a review and subscribe to the podcast. We definitely appreciate that. You can find everything, all the content from The Roost, at the site, attheroost.com. You can follow on Twitter, at The Roost, and then there's a feed specifically for the podcast, at The Roost Pod, or @TheRoostPod. But I'm very pleased to announce that our guest for this week is a former Rice baseball star and reigning world champion, third baseman for the Los Angeles Angels, Anthony Rendon. Anthony, how are you, man?
Man, I'm good. I'm actually tired. I scampered home, man. I just got back from the gym, so I'm pretty exhausted.
Well, I guess we might be able to call you world champion for a while longer if there isn't a 2020 season, right? That carries over.
Exactly. We're gonna be the first World Series champions to be able to be reigned for multiple seasons without winning multiple championships.
Hey, I'll take it, right? You take another trophy, but you get to hold on to it, right? Just ship it back and forth between you and all your teammates.
Yeah, I wish it was like that. It's I mean, that's what they do with the Stanley Cup, right? Or the soccer deal.
Yeah, you can't exactly chug a beer out of the commissioner's trophy. Like, it's not it's not quite built for that, you know.
It's a piece of metal, apparently, according to him.
Hey, we have a whole off season to figure out ways that we can creatively drink beverages off of trophies, among other things. Well, I guess since we're there, we can start on that right now. One of the reasons that we get to talk to you, which we're super grateful for, don't get us wrong, but one of the reasons we can do that is because you are not playing baseball right now. Yeah. What's it been like with the whole in spring training and then everything stops and now you're sitting in your house talking to us instead of sitting at the hot corner?
Yeah, it's it happened so fast. It was, for me, it was like, I mean, I gotta be honest, it was pretty comical. Everyone started freaking out about it, and then I guess once it started spreading like wildfire, and then you could kind of see the severity of some cases, and then more people started passing away and dying from it, from the virus. And then next thing you know, like, everyone gets shut down, and it happened, like, I feel like it happened overnight, because we were kind of handling our business, going through our routine, started to play games, and the next thing you know, we had a couple meetings, there's a rumor about it, and then, what was it, I think Rudy Gobert was the first one to have it, like, as a professional athlete, and then, like, the NBA started freaking out about it, and then everyone just went haywire. It was like shut down mode. And I definitely understand it, but I think everything just has to just happen so quickly. And it's kind of not shocking, but, man, it was abrupt.
Well, the NBA, so taking us back, the NBA shut down on Wednesday night, but y'all still played spring training games on Thursday.
Yeah. So, I mean,
I know you're locked in, focused on the moment, but at that point, like,
I mean,
sitting in the dugout, checking your phone.
Yeah, I mean, because we were in spring training. We definitely were aware of, like, the virus going around. Because obviously, I mean, I don't have any social media, but everyone nowadays gets their news from social media. And then I feel like, I mean, you know what's happening on the other side of the world to the minute, basically, because somebody's posting it and then, you know, somebody else posted it, whatever. And so we're up to speed on everything. And then next thing you know, like, you hear fans talking about it, and then we started getting kind of worried. We're like, all right, well, we're not going to sign autographs because, I mean, what the heck? They said it's kind of spread through contact with other people. So, like, we're deterring away from fans. And, of course, they have more stuff to say about us because we don't sign autographs. And so we're terrible people for not wanting to catch the virus. But I think what it came down to was, like, no major sports team wanted to be that sports team that kept on playing and then had, like, a legal case, a legal battle to go with it, and someone die under their control, basically.
Yeah, it's been kind of weird. I think it's the Korean League, baseball league, that just restarted again this week. I think I saw a video the other night of somebody hitting a walk-off home run in the 12th inning, and there's mannequins in the stands. So
I saw that.
I knew they were playing with no fans. I didn't realize they had simulated fans.
Yeah, it's nuts. They made these robots, and they literally stand out there. and it's like LED signs, and I guess you can like Bluetooth into it as a fan, and you can kind of put whatever cheer you want to go out there, and you can grab along with everyone else in that section and do like sequence cheers. It's crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm impressed. Hey, this is a Rice podcast. Let's make this happen in the States, right?
Yeah, tell the owners that. They want all the money they can get.
That's crazy. Okay, if we can spin back away from that, I guess pulling out of the initial moment of us being trapped in our houses now, if we kind of spin back, Rice, Houston, your past season and that championship run with the Washington Nationals. Mm-hmm. I know you've been asked 100 times, but how special was it for you, or strange or surreal or whatever word you want to throw onto it, getting to play World Series games a stone's throw away from where you played college ball?
Oh, yeah. It was, you could throw any adjective in there, good or bad. And it's definitely going to fall into that category just for the fact that, Rice was right down the street. My wife and I were both Houston born and raised, and, it was definitely overwhelming at times just for that reason. We had so many people calling us, and like the amount of support was great, but at the same time, like we had people contacting us that we hadn't heard for years, as it kind of happens to everybody, but, it kind of almost took away from, you know, us enjoying that moment of actually playing in the World Series. What 0.1% of the world gets to experience that, if that. And it just, at times, it kind of became overwhelming for the amount of phone calls, the amount of people that wanted to, I get it, want to be a part of it, but we tried to enjoy it as much as possible. And I think we made the best of it for sure.
It's one of those moments where you like you check your phone after every game and there's like 800 texts in there or something, and you just like, well, I'm not gonna get to all those.
Yeah, and then like a week later, it was like, how come you haven't hit me up? I'm like, oh my goodness, you want to go through my phone? I'm not opening up all these text messages. And then of course I become the bad person, so I'll take it.
The bad person. So okay, it wasn't quite bottom of the ninth, two outs, bases loaded. You know, the scenario that everyone dreams about as a kid. At the dirt plate. But you had in Game 6 and Game 7, I believe they were both in the seventh inning. You had a go ahead and a kind of a dagger home run that at the point, the game's never over.
Yeah,
but that's kind of the pinnacle as an athlete. If you dream, you want to be in the batter's box for that moment. What's going through your head when you hear the crack of the bat?
Get over the damn fence. Oh, especially in Game 6, because that was just right after the whole Trey Turner base running deal, where he was literally 6 inches inside the baseline where everyone runs, and then of course the umpire blew that call, but we're not gonna get into that. And so it was just a whole just mix of emotions in our dugout. It was a bunch of rage, and the fans were going crazy. You can imagine the stuff that they were saying behind our dugout and then the on deck circle. And so I knew, I had to bat two batters later after Eden, so I was kind of just relaxed. I'm like, I'm not gonna let this moment get to me. And I kind of let game one let those jitters get to me a little bit too much, where I try to play out of my element, basically. And so from then on, I kind of calmed myself down to actually just realize it's just a game, man. Like the bases are still 90 feet. Like the pitcher still had to throw it over the plate, and the fences are still relatively the same distance from home plate. So at that time, I was able to kind of just relax, release everything, not let the moment get to me, and just play baseball like we've been doing for 25 years of our lives.
And when you're just playing baseball and you make that hit, is it, you dream about it, but does it go slow motion? Does it go super fast? Do you remember all of it? Do you remember none of it? How do you process that?
I'm kind of a different animal on the field. Some people turn into the badass or whatever, the hard ass, the guy that has a mean face all the time. And I think I'm the complete opposite outside the field. I'm probably the most sarcastic, joking person there is. And then when I get in between those lines, I kind of just let my actions do the deed. And like just no emotion. Like I don't like to give any edge to anybody, and so if I just keep a straight face, no matter if it's a high or if it's a low, I mean, I don't think I'm gonna give an edge to anybody. So on the inside, I was definitely going nuts, and but like you said, it's, you know, it's not over until it's over, and I wanted to wait until or if and when it happened that we actually won. And the game was over. Game seven was done. We were actually world champions. And then I would kind of let those emotions just start flying because you see all those bad videos of people, you know, the sprinter running, like, you know, he's hot dogging it or whatever. He's like pumping his chest and then he just gets like passed up to lose to get second place. And like, that's like my worst fear. And so I didn't want to, I didn't want to like show any emotion and like, me pimping a home run and then it hitting the wall, like getting caught at the wall. That's like my worst fear.
Put your not, face not on a Sports Center.
Yeah, exactly. Not top 10 is not something you want to be on.
So not a bat flip guy?
No, hell no. No, no chance. I mean, you got some of these dudes hitting balls out of the stadiums and 50 rows deep. Mine are going like 5 rows deep. So I can't hit them almost.
Not sure enough for those.
Yeah, exactly.
They still count, though, right? Is this the same as long as it's over the fence?
Oh, yeah.
Still playing by those rules?
That's what Dusty Baker told me. He he grew up around, I guess not grew up, but he played with Hank Aaron and whatnot. So, and that's what he said. He goes, man, Hank always just said it still counts the same, whether it creeps over the fence or whether it goes to 50 rows deep. I'm like, hey, it makes sense. I'm like, you know, look at the scorecard saying, oh, 537 feet home run. Like, it doesn't count as two. Still counts as one.
Yeah, you've kind of found the sweet spot in there. I know we're getting – they've been doing the – I guess they've been reshowing all the steroid era and all of those great games on – I mean, ESPN has to put something on TV right now, so they've been going through
it's
that.
It's funny how that works because they, like – castrated all those people, and then when they need it right now to make baseball exciting again, they go back to them. So when it's beneficial for the league, of course they're going to go back to something. They're not going to let some people onto the Hall of Fame, though, apparently.
Yeah, well, I don't have the czar to make all those rulings, but you have found a way to kind of hit the sweet spot versus instead of you know, hitting what 70, 80, how many home runs? A billion, however many. Those guys hit and striking out 400 times. I think either last season you might have had a career high in doubles and just one home run enough to matter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I mean, obviously I'm not the biggest person in the world. I'm creeping up to 200 pounds, and these guys are like 240, 250, 260 out there. And I think Stanton and Judge and those guys are 270. I mean, I'm standing 100 feet away from them while they're at the plate. I mean, they're about to hit a ball down my throat. And, I mean, they could just touch the ball and it flies. I'm trying to put my whole weight behind it. If I could just put the barrel on it, I'm hoping it goes far.
Be the middleman between the picture that always goes around is Jose Altuve standing next to Aaron Judge.
Yeah, exactly.
Be the middle bar, which is still probably taller than most of us, but...
Well, it's always funny to me, and this is a total tangent, but it's always funny to me how we, like, our scale is totally skewed by, like, what sport guys are in. Because, like, so a Judge looks a lot like Aaron Gordon, you know, who plays for the Orlando Magic. Yeah. And I've seen pictures of them next to each other, and, you know, you think of Judge from baseball, and you're like, oh, my God, that guy is gigantic. Yeah. And he stands next to Gordon, who's, like, you know, a kind of an undersized power forward center type, and he, like, towers over him. And it's just like, oh, yeah, this is wild.
Like, basketball players are the best athletes out there. It's unbelievable. Like, you have LeBron, who's 6'8", 265. I mean, you have Dwight Howard out there, who's over 7 feet. I mean, you got so many people so many of those guys that are enormous just doing what they do and the type of movements that they do on a regular basis. It's nuts.
So this was, so this was your first All-Star season. Who would do better? Just pick your favorite, anybody, a Major League Baseball All-Star at, you know, a 3-point contest or a NBA All-Star trying to hit a fastball.
Without a doubt, the MLB All-Star has a better chance of making the three.
Yeah, I've thought about this a lot before, and it's like everybody's shot a basketball before, and like you I mean, like, it's a different scale. Like, no, like, nobody, I don't know, there are lots of people who couldn't make one, like, when guarded by actual NBA players, because but if you're just shooting in the gym, like, you can make a couple of those, but, like, the average person who does not have, who hasn't, like, grown up playing baseball is not going to have the hand-eye coordination to come anywhere close to something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so hitting a major league fastball is, I guess, pretty regarded as the toughest feat in sports up there. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're never going to admit to getting scared when you're in the batter's box, because of course not. You just won the World Series. But is there a particular pitcher that you've had the chance to face so far that you step in and your eyes get big and you're like, oh, here we go?
I mean, any of those guys that are coming out of the bullpen, because everyone that watches on TV thinks that all these balls that are getting thrown at us are straight. I mean, every guy in the bullpen now throws 97 to 100 and it moves 6 to 8 inches and it's going either down or away from you like that. I mean, it's not just doing this the whole time. It's sinking, it's cutting, it's doing something, and you have to try to hit that. So basically, I think the reaction time and the process time is, you know, for the ball to get from the pitcher's mound to over across home plate is like, what, 0.4 seconds. And then you have 0.2 seconds to make a decision. And then, so you have that other 0.2 seconds to actually put the bat on the ball. So it's any guy that's coming out of the bullpen that's throwing a million, it's like, okay, awesome.
Say it all looks the same when they have that little stat box that they put up on the TV and they show the curved line that goes in and boom, it's right there.
Yeah, because those stat boxes are the TV boxes and like the strike zone, whatever deal that they show, like on Fox and ESPN, it's the most BS box in the world.
We have
overhead cameras.
Yeah,
you can see on top of the plate, and I'm like, huh, that ball was definitely in the chalk, but on TV it says it's inside the box. Makes sense.
I hate those too, because it takes away some of the fun watching it, where you can't like argue with the umpire.
They're protecting the umpire.
Because it's like, you know, it's a fastball that's like a little low and away, but he's been calling that all day, and you're like, come on, ump, you gotta call that one. And then you like they show it on the box, and it's like down here, away from the strike zone. And you're like, okay, fine, I guess it's not a strike, but like, come on.
Well, see, and I learned baseball strike zones with backyard baseball.
Yeah.
You don't remember that? I used to play with Pablo Sanchez, and he's got the little tiny itty bitty box down there. That's how it's got to work, right? So, like, you were talking about Aaron Judge, his strike zone has to be, you know, the size of New York, because he's the size of New York.
And hey, that's the best point, too, is like, if you notice, if you ever watch another game, the box is always the same size, no matter who comes up to the plate. But people are constantly arguing. I'm like, okay, like, Altuve was just batting to end the last inning, and now Judge is hitting. The box is the same size.
It's not how it works.
For pitchers, it does. Oh, man.
Well, you know, the good and bad, and, you know, hopefully we do get to watch another game, but for now, your last baseball memory, I guess spring training, but was playing in front of, I don't know how many Minute Maid holds, 45, 46,000, something like that. Moving over to LA in the offseason, and you signed the big contract. And I know there was a couple months that passed in between you winning the World Series and moving out to LA. What was that decision like having, because baseball is not like every other sport where you get to become a free agent maybe 3, 4, or 5 times. You get your moment and you got to hope it's timed up right, and, you know, coronavirus hasn't shut down the league.
Yeah, exactly.
But what was the decision like for you moving out to LA? And then I know it's not all about the money, but is there a portion of getting that big contract is kind of just, I guess, let me ask you, how do you view that in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, like for that reason, you said baseball is not like a lot of other sports where you can become a free agent multiple times and whatnot. And I think with basketball, you can become a free agent in 3 years or 4 years. So
like
those
LeBron's a free agent every year. Whenever he wants to be.
Well, because they always sign those like 1-1 deals where they got a player option and they always decline to get more tagged on. So it's like,
because they have the salary cap, so they can do that. They're like, all right, well, we know that the revenue is going to continue to rise and so-and-so is going to be off the books. So, and this max salary contract is going to be, you know, X amount more than what I'm making now. So I can sign a 1-year, 2-year deal. And he's good enough to be able to do that, because who doesn't want LeBron James? But I think for us, I think the biggest thing was, I mean, like you said, it wasn't about the money. I mean, if it was about the money, then we wouldn't have came to California and got hit with these taxes. So if you look at it in the grand scheme of things, we're not going to net as much as we would in other places. So people always say, oh, he just chased the money or whatnot. And think about it a little bit more. So we just wanted to make what decision that was best for us as a family. We wanted to be with an organization that actually wanted us to be a part of their organization, you know, and not necessarily just for me as a player wise. They wanted, you know, my wife to be a part of their organization, my daughters to be a part of them. And it's going to be a great family atmosphere. And we wanted to be in a place that, you know, people had nothing but positive things to say about. And obviously being fortunate to play in this league for 7 seasons, I've had a lot of veterans coming through through the Nationals, and so I still have those numbers. And so I reached out to a lot of people and say, hey, what do you think about this place? What do you think about that place? How is this team? How's that team? How's that organization? And everyone that we have talked to, or I talked to, had nothing but great things to say about the Angels. And so that played a huge role in our decision as well.
And then you sign the contract and you move out to California. Is that kind of the next steps?
No. So we ended up agreeing to the deal on like Wednesday. It was like Wednesday night. And then Thursday they called like, hey, you gotta get on the plane. So,
we don't have baseball for another like how many months?
Yeah, exactly.
Indefinite, but
I want you to come out. It was Tuesday night. They called Wednesday. It's like, hey, you gotta get on a plane Thursday. And then I did the whole physical, I think Friday. So it happened within like one or 2 days, and I was already out there after we had agreed. And like, oh, we wanted to do the press conference on Saturday and this. And so, it was bang, bang, bang. And so my wife and I, we tried to look for homes while we were out here, and then, still continued to look as we flew back home to Houston. And then we stayed there throughout the whole off season. And we finally found a home, and fortunate enough, we teamed up with the interior design team or a company that was able to furnish the place for us and be ready for us by like April 1st, I think, was when we came out here. So it was nonstop, bang, bang, bang.
So you didn't even get out to your house until there was no baseball to be played.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah. So we stayed in Arizona when we got shut down. Because we couldn't go back home to Houston. We threw away all of our food in our refrigerator because we assumed that we weren't going to be back for 9 months. And so we're like, we have nothing back home. And we heard that Houston was bad grocery store-wise, talking with my parents and her parents. And then like we couldn't go to California. We couldn't come here because the house wasn't ready. So we were staying with friends in Arizona and kind of just going to the grocery store sporadically and stocking up on stuff. Because we heard, the media made it seem like California was the worst place in the world to, you know, to have the virus or to go shopping, and people were killing each other over toilet paper, stuff like that. But of course, when we get here, it's fine.
Wait, so you win the World Series, ride off into the sunset, sign the big free agent deal, and then 2 months later, you're couch surfing? I mean, not quite, but it's funny. It's funny how life works, right?
Yeah. I mean, shoot, everyone thinks that, living the baseball dream or this playing a sport is like legit. But I mean, we move 4 times a year, like 3 or 4 times a year from Houston to spring training to wherever city we go. Then we go back home. So, I mean, we have 2 kids. We have 2 dogs now. So, I mean, it's a lot of crap.
But at least on my end, I don't want to make light of of the current situation and like everything going on with this pandemic. And I'm not a medical professional. All the disclaimers that I should have been saying already. But I know for me, it's been kind of nice just with my little ones. Is this is a time of the year for you that you know, you're not home at, you know, at, on a, what, I don't even know what day of the week it is. The day of the week doesn't matter anymore, but pick a day. But has it been nice to kind of, I mean, probably for the first time in your professional career, just kind of really, really wind down and get to, you know, movies and eating popcorn and doing Zoom school online?
Yeah. So fortunately and unfortunately, our oldest is only, she's about to turn two, so she's not in school yet. But yeah, I think, like you said, like we have this opportunity to hang out with our families, and I've never had this, you know, opportunity to spend this much time with the girls, unless it's in the off season, and that's only for a few months out of the year. So, and then our season was cut short. Our off season was cut short because we made it, we won the World Series all the way to game seven. So that was already in November, or October was already taken. So we had November, December, January, basically to spend time together. And then, so now, our youngest is about to turn 2 months. So, my wife was, you know, being a trooper and taking care of both of those girls, back home in Houston before she came out in Arizona. And so being able to help her out around here and, kind of just have that adjustment of getting into a routine with her and how we're going to handle the girls and juggling all of that stuff. And, you know, communication is actually a huge key in a relationship now that we're around 24/7. So it's been good to actually, you know, I mean, if this is what retirement is going to look like we got to kind of figure it out. So it's going to be good to kind of just have this to keep going.
Yeah, hopefully less diapers and less bottles by the time you get to that stage of your career.
Hopefully we're not having kids back then or at that time.
Yeah, is your wife excited to have you around, to have an extra hand, or is it more of a, oh God, get this guy out of my hair, he's useless?
Or does it change from hour to hour?
There's definitely moments of both. I'm not going to say which one of more or the other, but there's definitely both moments, because, I mean, she's had to learn on the fly and how to handle her business, and so she's constantly just moving, and because she got into a routine and how she, you know, she puts our oldest down for a nap and she feeds our youngest every 3 hours and this. And so at times I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to maybe go watch our oldest, just maybe go watch her color or something. I don't know, make it look like I'm doing something, or I'm going to go wash the dishes and try to help out. And so we're still trying to find that balance. And so hopefully we can figure it out soon.
You set up the tee yet out in the backyard? Get a wiffle bat?
I'm not going to say anything on record because we're recording right now. I'm just going to say,
there might be a story or two.
I'm just going to say I've been staying in shape.
Hey, there you go. You got to bone up with, I got some little ones, and I will say that the youngest is, can throw a better fastball than the older one. And he just turned one. So, you know,
that's how that happens.
But I know it's been fun. And like we said, you just get the, taking the positives from a situation with some negatives. And I guess I did want to circle back a little bit. I know through some mutual friends and stuff that we've talked to that a lot of what you like to do is not just between the white lines, and you got a lot of side projects and things, charity and work and other stuff that you've been doing away from the field. So have you had the chance to kind of plug into some organizations and some different groups that you want to be a part of? Because I know as much as you love baseball, there's some other things to Anthony Rendon that go beyond baseball.
Yeah, definitely. I think the way my wife and I want to live is that we don't want baseball, you know, our occupation to define who we are as individuals. Because once that's over, then, you know, what identity do we have once we retire if we're not, you know, we don't have baseball anymore. So I think we hold on to bigger things and selfless things, I guess I could say. But we're definitely, we partnered with some individuals back home in Houston, and we were having the opportunity to be able to feed over, I think, 700 people back home who've gotten furloughed. And then we're actually trying to get in contact with some people out here in the LA area to try to feed some more people. So we don't have any Instagram or Twitter or nothing like that, and so we're not blasting it saying that, oh, look at us, like we're feeding all these people, look what the good stuff we're doing, we're good people. I mean, I think you're supposed to give your time and, you know, your donations at the kindness of your heart, not just so you can get some credit and give yourself a pat on the back.
Yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. And wait, so who's running your Twitter account? You do have one of those.
I actually do. Yeah. So my buddy from I think we've known each other since middle school. He made that one. I don't even know how long ago. Whenever he said it,
I checked it. It hasn't been. There's no tweets from it for like 3 years.
So, yeah.
He's fallen down on his duties lately.
So he made that for me. Like I don't even know how long ago. And I don't even know the password or anything to it. And so he just, if I really have something that I really care about or I want to get sent, then, I'll tell him to send something. But I think I'm trying to stay away from social media, man. It's a death trap. It's so much negativity on there. And I think it brings people down and it's not being used what it was initially intended for.
And it sounds like if you hadn't, well, let's see, since you last stopped using social media, if we're going by the last post, what, 2017, become an all-star, win the World Series, move out to California, like, things are working out pretty well.
I think I'm going to try to stay on this track and not have social media.
Hey, I will cut Twitter right now if that's what it's
like. Yeah, if you can promise me that contract, I'll drop all of it. That's all it takes, right? That's the only thing.
I mean, we would also get to trade. I mean, no offense to Galveston, but I'm sure you have a couple beaches within driving distance that might be just maybe a step up.
Yeah, we're not too far.
You make do. Well, and then I guess this is a Rice podcast, so we do want to circle back, and it has been a while since you last on the Blue and Gray. But I wanted to kind of ask you about, obviously, new guy at the helm, Matt Braga is the new coach, whether or not you had the chance to chat with him at all. I know you have been busy playing baseball up until the last month or so, but what you think about what the direction that program is trying to rebuild and going in, and I guess the last year or two of how things have been going down at South Main.
Yeah, well, according to their win-loss record, it doesn't look like it's going too hot. But I've connected with Braga multiple times, and we got together in the off season as well. So we got to chat for a good bit. And man, he's full of energy, awesome individual, believer in Christ. So that's awesome. And I think that's going to go a long way, especially for that program, and I think for that school in itself. But I think once he brings his energy and he actually has the opportunity to have his recruiting class, I guess. So it was, correct me if I'm wrong, is it maybe the last couple of years was the old recruiting class or the old underclass or upperclassmen?
Is that what? Yeah, I think this, well, of course, every NCAA calendar is completely wonky right now, but I think the next incoming recruiting class of 2021 will be the first guys that Braga himself has actually recruited.
Yeah. I mean, so based on, I mean, his energy, his love for the game, his ability to teach, I feel like is what from what I've heard, I think, I mean, the sky's the limit for him. I think it's all positive. So I think everyone wants, you know, wins right now. But I think the program was already unfortunately trending downhill before he got there. And so I think we neglected to, you know, expect a maybe one or two or three, you know, losing seasons before we kind of made that trek back up. So, I mean, I think everyone's trying to kill him right now because, you know, we had one losing season, but I mean, dang, I think he's fared pretty well thus far. And, you know, he has a lot of great energy to bring to that program.
Now, well, baseball is the sport of large sample sizes, right? Don't you got to play at least, what's 162? Well, who knows? This season for y'all might be 40 games. Who knows? But
yeah. So
I've been asking just about everybody that comes on, the former athletes, do you have a favorite non-baseball Rice memory?
Oh, man, I have a lot of those.
Any that you can share with
that's what I was trying to think about right now.
Yeah.
Oh man, I think for me, just because I have so much love for basketball, I was able to I was interning with the marketing department for the athletic, the marketing team for the athletic department, and so I would run the basketball games. I think the women basketball games, I think the volleyball games. And so we would do some of those the halftime or the timeout t-shirt tosses and like stuff like that. And so I think having to have that view of the other side of the game, not from actually being a player, but from being on the other side of the front office side. I mean, it was just marketing, but I think that was actually a good experience, and I got to be around some basketball too at the same time.
So we know how far you can throw a baseball. How far can you throw a t-shirt? How high in the tutor have you gotten one of those?
Well, you guys know that our fans and their average age, so you can't really throw it too far or too hard. So you kind of got to give it a little lob. Or maybe only throw it a couple rows back so, you know, you don't hurt anybody. But it's all dependent on how you roll the t-shirt, that's for sure. So...
Yeah, because if it unravels, like you're gonna lose everything.
Yeah, and then if you roll it too tight though, where it's hard, you're gonna kill somebody. So like, you guys know about the military roll, like the military t-shirt roll?
I'm learning something right now. This is good.
A Chipotle burrito type shape, and so you just roll it like that, and I think it can go a long way.
Well, there you go. I feel like a missed opportunity. We had a current AD, JP Abercrombie, on a couple of weeks ago, and she was talking to us about the t-shirt cannon. Now, it sounds like Chipotle burrito t-shirt would have been the perfect fold to put into a t-shirt cannon.
Yeah,
we're going to have to pass this along.
We've now had two t-shirt distribution experts on this podcast.
I'm telling you, once again, though, you got to be aware of who is on the other side of this cannon.
So hey, we're gonna hype you up when your time need a retirement plan. They'll still need people to throw t-shirts.
Hey, if the price is right, I'll come back.
We'll run it by your wife.
She might want me to get out of the house.
No. Well, she can come too. We got you. There's a seat or two in Tudor.
Yeah, she can sit down, but she probably won't be good at throwing, that's for sure.
We will not tell her or not tell her to listen to the podcast. That's her own call.
She's changing lots of divers, so she her time is her time is taken.
And then if you did had to pick, that's a fun off field one. If you had to pick a moment, a game, what have you from baseball.
Man.
Could you? Two, three.
Oh man. Oh shoot. That's one that I can share as well.
One that doesn't require teammate approval.
Yeah.
Or, you know, ask for forgiveness, however that works.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think for me, it was my freshman year. I mean, we had so many great guys on that team. We had so many great upperclassmen, and then we just gelled together. I think for those upperclassmen, I think I have gravitated toward them even more so than any other class. So I keep in contact with those guys the most probably. And man, we dominated so much that year. I mean, I felt like we were scoring 10, 12 runs a game. And I think that whole year in itself was just so fun because we were scoring so many runs.
That was Ryan Berry on that team?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. His wife Tara was a good friend of my sister's at Jones.
Okay.
When they were there, they were in the same class.
Yeah, old Barry, he's a man. I still remember he came in one day, I think it was a practice, or it might have been practice or to a game. He, you know, Barry, he looked like he hadn't shaved in 12 years. And he literally just took his freaking shaver and went right down the middle. And so...
I think I remember that.
Hey, like everyone asked him, I think even a reporter asked him or somebody, and he goes, well, when you have an ERA in the two, Coach Graham pretty much lets you do what you want. I'm like, fair enough.
So yeah. What's the hitting equivalent when you hit, you know, 400, 450?
Yeah, somewhere up there, that's for sure.
That'd be fun.
Oh yeah, I haven't talked to him in so long. I gotta see if I can find his number. I gotta give him a holler.
He's probably free right now. most of us are.
No, I don't know about him. He's always doing something.
Well, and then when we finally do get back to baseball, It's interesting. We had Calvin Anderson on, and or Calvin Anderson, Christian Covington on the show, and we were discussing with him about pro sports and when you get back and what sport is most suited to play without fans, as if that is what it comes to. Yeah. He seemed to think football was the way to go. Is playing without fans? Hey, don't shoot the messenger.
He may have been a little biased. But, you know,
I mean. But, I mean, is that a kind of thing? You just throw the ball out tomorrow, and if it's safe, you'll play? Or what's kind of your thought on whatever this potential restart, shortened, abbreviated season in Arizona or L.A.? Or what are your thoughts on how baseball comes back or what you'd like?
I think it all boils down to the owners and how much they – like the cap on how much they want to make, because they're going to make money no matter what. I mean, the TV deals that are out there, the amount of money that they get from the TV deals. And if we play any sort of regular season games, then we're allowed to have any sort of playoff, you know, baseball. And with the way the season in this, you know, circumstance is, we've been talking about having, you know, 12 teams or 16 teams, a Sweet 16 or something along those lines. So it's going to be something crazy. So where, you know, we're going to have more games and we're going to have more playoff shares and we're going to have a larger TV revenues. And so these owners are going to get their money, but it's all about how much they don't want to make in the regular season and playing without fans. That's what I think is going to boil down to that. And they'll push it to where we can still keep, you know, players and families safe. That's for sure.
And then I know you just got to the AL West and you haven't played in it yet, but they've been throwing out the ideas of splitting everybody up in spring squads. Would you pick? You'd rather take the run through the AL West this year, or would you rather play the Arizona teams for spring training and that kind of split squad setup?
Man, I don't care. It doesn't matter who we're going to play, at least for me personally. I think if we just go out there and have the opportunity to play, I actually think that baseball is one of the few sports that could, you know, actually thrive without fans. I mean, there's really no fan element in baseball. Only maybe a handful of stadiums, and that's even at times. If you look at football, I mean, those fans are going crazy 24/7, and a huge impact of that sport is the fact that, you know, the quarterback can't hear his plays or something like that. And so there's miscommunication. So you have a bad play. I mean, you could play with golf. Those guys, you know, they don't need fans because they're all quiet anyways. So you're hitting a ball that doesn't move, but nobody's talking. You better be able to be good at it. And basketball too.
Shots fired.
Hey, I suck at golf and it frustrates me too, but I mean, come on, you got to be able to, you know, you got to be able to cheer. That's why I love the Waste Management tournament, where those fans cheer their tails off, and it kind of gives another, you know, side of golf that you don't see. But I think basketball, they can do without fans as well. So I think it's either going to be basketball or baseball that comes back first.
Yeah, the thing about football is just like the rosters, and like there's so many more people that like have to be there. Pro football game, and like the rosters are so much bigger. Like, just the thought of playing that in like a, where you have to have like a closed system to basically, you know, where you're gonna have to test everybody and those sorts of things. Like, I just don't know how that works with even NFL rosters, like let alone, you know, getting into 120 man college football rosters or anything like that.
Yeah, it's like with any sport. Like, okay, you have one individual that tests positive. You're going to quarantine just him for 2 weeks, but are you going to quarantine the whole team? Because he's been exposed to every single person in that locker room. And then what if he's your best player on the team? You're going to be pissed that you have to quarantine him for, you know, 2 weeks. But what if he's like asymptomatic, so he really doesn't have any symptoms, but he feels fine and he can still play, but you don't want him to get exposed to anybody else? So there's too many variables.
What you're saying is we're going to make sure that you and Mike Trout and Pujols are at least 6 foot away from each other at all times.
Probably just Trout. I mean, they'll put him in a bubble so he can play.
Yeah.
But anything that they can do, as long as there's a baseball, I'll be happy. I'm sure you'll be happy too to get back to. I mean, it won't be normal, but whatever it'll be, there will be baseball.
Yeah, for sure. I think some this nation needs it too. People just need something to hold on to right now because they're running out of shows to watch on Netflix. So if they could watch a live sport where they don't know the outcome, and so it gives some sort of intensity and unknowns.
You got a Netflix recommendation to leave on the way out? Anything we need to be watching? What's on your queue?
Yeah, we don't have time for Netflix. We're chasing freaking girls around the house.
Daniel yeah. Tiger.
With a 2-year-old, you probably got the Disney Plus more so than the Netflix. That's that's the sweet spot. Like,
it stays on Disney Junior in our house, and she's just like, she'll get locked in for about 10 minutes and run around, and then she'll come back and just get tuned in a little bit more. And then we feed her in the same thing.
Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah.
Especially with a little one. Well, thanks, man. We had a blast catching up with you. And, hopefully you're back to work soon and we don't have another excuse to chat for a while. But we certainly enjoyed it and wanted to say thank you for checking in and stopping by and reliving some old memories and talking about hopefully the chance to make some new ones sometime soon.
Oh, yeah. It'll come back eventually. But I think making memories right now with your family is just as important.
Thanks so much. We really enjoyed having you on. Thanks to everybody for listening. And Rice Fight. We'll see y'all later.
This show was edited and produced by Carter Spires. It features music from Joseph McDade.